To moderate this session, he's the executive director at the UCLA Anderson School Center for Management of Enterprise, Entertainment, and Sports. He's a longtime friend. Please welcome Mr. Jay Tucker.
Hi, everybody. It's great to be here. As Guy said, I run a center at UCLA focused on the business of media, entertainment, and sports. So happy to be here because obviously the technology shifts that we've been seeing over the last really 10 years have transformed not just the industry from the perspective of operations, but also have opened up more and more opportunities for folks with business training, right? And changed the way we look at technology in the space. So it's interesting because I had prepared a very specific type of conversation for this crew, which I think we've already had this morning. Some themes that I heard, moving from simply adding software in the firm to real business transformation. There's a statement that was made by Aaron Levy. We can debate it, actually. Distribution is free and infinite. And then talking, you know, Dr. Remdesh was talking about going from service to software, right? Service driven by people to leveraging software and technology platforms to deliver those services. Our focus on this panel will be to talk more about the global market, what's changing, and how, you know, we're looking, in a new way about kind of business operations and using technology to back that up and create the value. And I've got a bunch of great folks to talk to about this, right? So I'm going to actually start with Lena, who's immediately to my right, and ask you if you can talk a little bit about how this kind of increasingly global market for media has changed the way you think about the business.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things that Warner Brothers has been known to do is really focus on local productions. And that's been important for our success in a global economy because we really want to support the creative local productions that are going on globally. And that what that means for us is we have to have a nimble, agile department that can support these local productions to be turned around and supported and distributed not only in the local countries but globally as well. So that means that not only while we have an amazing team of individuals in Burbank, we do have a global department and we constantly have to bridge the gap using technology, how to make sure everybody is working with each other. One of the other ways that we're working on the impacts of global consumers changes is really focusing on initiatives such as short-form content, which one of our initiatives is called Stage 13, where we are producing a very diverse set of content and getting it out into the marketplace where internationally people may not have the same internet speeds that we do here. And so it's important to be able to provide shorter form content as consumers increasingly want to have shorter content, less attention span, all those kinds of challenges.
So you bring up a fascinating point about the fact that looking at different markets, infrastructure, cultural expectations, ability to pay, expectations in terms of experience will vary, right? You're creating content in different formats to address that, but how are you actually managing distribution of all these different kind of forms, formats, content lengths, et cetera, to all these different markets?
Yeah, so we really work on structuring a department around technology that will enable us to make changes quickly and distribute content. We always joke that accelerated delivery is really the new normal now, thanks to our wonderful partners that always want content earlier. And so what we focus on is finding the technology that will support the ideas that our wonderful teams come up with of how we can get content out quickly and while also maintaining the quality of the content. So a lot of what we need to do is make sure that we are culturally sensitive to the local type of content that we're distributing and how we're doing translations as well. It's important also.
Love it, love it. Which brings this perfect segue to Connie. So in an earlier panel, I think we heard about how some were trying to get content out on the television side to different markets in 7 days. I don't know that that's true on the Netflix side, but can you talk a little bit about some of the challenges involved with, you know, getting content distributed to these markets?
So I'm Connie Lee. I'm in content distribution at Netflix. I oversee all of our international content, as well on the operations side, as well as original film. And to speak to that, we certainly do have, so Chelsea, the talk show that we have, our original show on Netflix, it's a perfect example of where we did execute localization. So I think it shot on Mondays and we released it globally on Netflix in 25 plus languages with subtitles 2 days later, like week to week, three times a week actually. So that's a really great example of where we really did innovate in localization, used a technology called respeaking. We had tested several different translators across the globe in market and had like two people as a backup for every single language. So you can just imagine like not only the production itself, but just the production for the localization that went into that. So we've certainly, kind of pulled off heroics in that way. And we do have a fair amount of day after broadcast shows as well that we do try to support in relevant languages to be available the next day. So I think for Netflix as a global service, that's where our biggest challenge but opportunity is in the localization space, as well as in asset delivery. When we had launched globally last year in January in 190 countries, it was largely an English-only service. But now we're kind of taking this launch-and-learn approach and adding languages and kind of relaunching the service in the local language. So then that's a big localization challenge. And on the encoding side, our encoding teams had come up with a new recipe to support mobile encodes and just smaller files to support those lower bandwidth in developing markets like India. So that's just a couple of our challenges, but that's what we're focusing on right now.
No, that's fascinating. And how do you think about kind of the quality control piece of that, right? With all that localization, sounds like you have a process in place, but where's the check to make sure that you're actually hitting on all cylinders when content is being released in these very different kinds of markets?
We do an automated QC check on every file that gets delivered to Netflix. So that catches a lot of our the errors that might be there. And then still to this day, a human checks every single file, whether we watch the whole thing or just do a spot check. And it is, one TV episode can have 20 plus, depending how many languages, files with it. So you can imagine the exponential number of assets that get delivered to Netflix every day. We are going to be innovating in the QC space as well with just more like machine learning, I would say, in that area, where we can kind of learn upon the data that we receive and then check the assets that we know needs more checking based off of historical data, as well as, and then just be more hands-off if they have a proven track record.
I love it. My only request is that I want to be the voice of the English dubbing, right? Hi there. Okay, so Quinn, Google, massive, massive, massive development shop, doing all kinds of things, solving all kinds of business problems, right? But really, historically, Google solutions aren't necessarily the kinds of solutions that get customized to the degree that I imagine you would need to customize them to work in, what did you say, 117 countries? So how do you make that work?
So I'm Quinn Nguyen, obviously with Google. I've been with Google for almost 5 years on Play, movies, and TV on the content operations side. And previously, before joining Play, I was with Google on the advertising side. So I've seen growth on just a number of products within our company, global growth. And for us, we've been lucky and fortunate to have other products that have been very successful in scaling globally that we can look to as a baseline as we're trying to plan and strategize how what our product direction would be for Play. And so going back to your question about the products that we build. Everyone knows we build products that our engineers have every intention of scaling as internationally as possible. But once those products are built, oftentimes the pizzazz of that product and the excitement of building that product diminishes a little bit on the engineering side. and what's left to localize and ensure that our users internationally have the customized products that make sense for their market or that audience falls on other teams to solve. And oftentimes, it falls on operations and content operations teams or distribution teams to solve those localization problems that sometimes the engineering folks may no longer be interested in solving. And so that's a challenge that we have at Google, not just on Play, but just on a lot of other products that we have.
Right. I just think about the fact that Google is so accessible globally. And, you know, there's an expectation for kind of quality of experience there that I'm sure you want to make sure you maintain from market to market. But as we were talking with Lena, the technology infrastructure, regulatory issues, and as Connie mentioned, localization issues, you know, are there any points of friction that you see that you would like to, you know, that you think would make, if we found some technology-related solutions, would make life easier for people on your team?
Well, this is where it comes, where it's interesting for those of us in this room, and it is a partnership within the industry to solve the problem of localization. Because as a retailer, we rely so heavily on content owners to provide ratings or localized assets to us so that we could make that available to or accessible to our users. And so that first step of building the platform and the IT solution is just one step. The rest of the supply chain is just around availability of the localized assets or metadata or so forth, and that's what the studios own. Mm-hmm. And then accessibility is where, for retailers and platforms, that's the problem that we try to solve in partnership with the rest of the industry and the content owners.
Okay, great. So I want to stay on localization. Now, how many of you have ever watched a show that was originally done in English in Poland? Or in a couple. So if you have, you know that in Poland, what happens is there's a narrator, right? It's not dubbed. The people start talking, and then an old guy's voice comes on, and basically in Polish says, "And then she said, and then he said," right? Which is something that I found extremely striking when I was in Poland, because it's so different from what our expectations are in the U.S. with respect to what we experience, right? There are some folks that are very familiar with using subtitles and just watching stuff in the original targeted language. Other folks who expect not only dubbing, but it to be synced, right? And we also know that across cultures, localization also means certain references don't make sense. Certain tropes in a story may not make sense because culturally they don't resonate, right? I'd love it, you know, and this is the last question I'm going to ask them. So you guys, please feel free to queue up your questions as well. But I'd love for you guys to just talk a little bit about your process, how you think about localization, and what are some of the things that you think you've done to, you know, kind of delight viewers?
Yeah, so one of the things that we're trying to really transform into is making sure that we're a studio that thinks about it from the beginning of a theatrical content window all the way down through to home entertainment and consumer products. And so when you think about localization, we talked about some that things that Disney talked about where you have to also create content that is a little bit different. Although a movie like Storks may come out in domestically in one way, you may have to do a little bit of a different ending depending on the country that you have. So the same thing when you're actually localizing content. So we really start to focus on how can we take the assets and the creation process at the beginning of a theatrical window or a TV window and looking at how are we going to be able to utilize the same types of assets and localization downstream so we're not having to redo all of the content further on down. And utilizing similar voices, talent, whatnot. The other thing that we really focus on is listening to consumers' demands within the marketplace. There's definitely, you have to protect your IP, so we will definitely go through a process of making sure things like on Big Bang Theory, Bazinga, not going to get translated. There's some certain things that you have to keep that word, right? Sheldon's not going to say it differently in Polish. It will be that voice that says, he said bazinga. and that's just what's going to have to happen. But you listen to the local marketplace of what their needs are. And look, Polish lecturing is a reality on TV content, but theatrically, we don't do Polish lecturing. We do translation. So I think it's just based on the marketplace. We listen to the market, and we change it as is necessary. And we also listen to our partners, because when Netflix says, here's what we need in these territories, we're going to also listen to that and say, does it make sense for our product to be done that way? Let's have a discussion about that and partnering very closely together on that.
We do all of that. And then I also wanted to talk about how we definitely look at data. So we look at the consumption data of the type of asset that was used to watch any show, whether English language or French language, and in every whatever markets that we're interested in looking at that data for. And we'll pivot based on that data. So if there's really high consumption on a subtitle asset in Japanese versus the dub, and because we can compare and look at every combination, like did they turn it off, did they leave it on, did they turn on English as they're watching English language content as just a learning mechanism. So that we really utilize those as signals to then direct, okay, do we need to then try to create or acquire more of the English language assets for English content in Japanese, or what have you, and we'll make those decisions even to inform, you know, do we create dubs or not, and because that's a huge financial investment, whereas subtitles are a lot cheaper and faster. Another thing that we've done in that space is rolled out this testing platform called Hermes, and it is a scalable kind of first of its kind test that any translator can take, and really the intent of that is to, and the test includes things like phrases like bazinga or things that Chelsea Handler would say that are very colloquial and like do they get it and be able to translate into their local language. So the whole point of the test though is really to identify the top talent per language and actually assign them an identification number so that then we can start collecting again data on the quality of those translations that we're getting from specific individuals to then match them to the right projects that, you know, hey, we need like the best talent to translate House of Cards, and maybe for a documentary, like not as much. So we're doing things like that to just be able to scale that for ourselves because we have a ton of original content as well as just the licensed content that we have, yet we have to make it available in 25 plus languages and more.
I find the discussion around localization and decision making very interesting. Because oftentimes for very large retailers, where many of us are based here in California, and we service, you know, for Play, we service 117 territories globally, and a lot of the decisions that we make on what service or what language offerings or what format offerings we provide to our users in those 116 territories outside of the US are decisions that we make here from LA, from California. And we should try to provide as much localization options as we can to our users internationally, but then also consider that balance that some of our users don't want too much localization. End of the day, a lot of times they want options. They want options in the various types of languages that are available to them, whether it's, you know, the dubbed audio or the subtitled version. But we in this room should not make those decisions for all of our users, but we should make decisions on what we can make available to the user so that they can decide what language or what how they want to consume the content.
And one thing just to add about your question previously about what kind of technology needs do we need for localization efforts. So thinking about in the future where we have VR, AR type of content, 360 content, one of the things that we have to look at is how do you localize to make the experience still a VR, AR type of environment. So you can't just slap a subtitle on a VR type of a content. You have to use different types of technology so that the user is still within that space, but still understanding that some of that content is localized. localized for them. So that's going to be one of the things that we really do look towards technology about. How do you solve those types of problems so you can still localize quickly while maintaining that dimension that the customer's trying to be in?
And if it sounds like, and I know we're going to probably talk about this topic a lot later, you've all mentioned data, right? As we move forward, it seems as though data is going to play a much larger piece in this role with respect to tagging assets, figuring out what works and what doesn't, making things available in certain markets and not available in others, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Can you speak to that a little bit? And then I'd love to take your questions.
So I'll just say that from a data perspective, data is very important, but people are more important. And that's key to some of our success and what our strategies are, is around getting back to the first presentation about you have to give people the autonomy and authority to be making decisions, and you have to bring on talent that understands how to make business decisions based on all of the data, because we're, in essence, in data overload at this point. So you have to know what data is going to be important, what data is not important, and how to create a structure and a culture within your organization to really support people making the right kinds of decisions.
Took the words out of my mouth.
Okay. Questions from the audience? Yeah, friend. Here, hold on.
So in your position in localizing the content around the world, do you see yourselves as creatives, as technologists, or as business, the business side of it?
I would say all three. It's certainly a creative process that just because you can, you know, get some data from it or slap some automation, like, you can't rush dubbing, you know, you can't, you can, you'll just, the quality will really dip down. So we certainly struggle with that, because there's, with our original productions, and schedules start getting really tight, because film production still is what it is, and it's done physically. So that's where we still struggle with, sure, we pulled that off for Chelsea, but is that scalable? No, not now. And then, yes, it still is a creative process that take humans and talent and skill and years of experience to be able to accomplish that.
And I think from my perspective, one of the things that impressed me the most when I joined the company was how much creative intent goes into selecting the actors that do the dubbing voices. So you really try to find people that sound very similar that are the English speakers. So you have to have talent on hand that sounds similar. And then also, because our windows are shrinking, you have to go through a creative process when we can use temp voices to make the determination of, is this temp voice sound somewhat similar? Can we do this really quickly? To really support that whole ecosystem of that voices. So it's definitely all three of those things.
Well, I'd add a fourth category. So aside from being business, tech, and creatives, there's just also just that responsibility as content owners and content providers to customers and users, that there's the it's not always going to be a business decision in what content goes where, because your top 10 markets could produce 90% of your revenue, but then it's a self-fulfilling prophecy if you don't invest in the other 200 territories that make up 1% of your revenue.
Other questions?
Question.
I have
protocol.
A mic.
Oh, you got one over here?
Sorry, beat you to it. My first question is for Lena. As a content provider, your growth sounds pretty contingent on the growth of the YouTubes, the Googles, the Netflixes. So how are you innovating and promoting growth globally without relying on them? And then my second question is for Connie and Quinn. How are you enabling and supporting your content providers to grow as well?
So for the first question, we definitely rely on the support of our partners to distribute our content. But we've also been undergoing a process where we're looking at creating our own digital methods of distributing our content. So we already have a couple platforms that are over the top that we've done, and like I mentioned, the short form content as well. So we're looking at continuing the stream that's made us very successful, but looking at how to disrupt that same ecosystem and support it with new other initiatives as well, again, based on consumer needs.
We do that in two ways in terms of partnering with our partners. So one, it is partnering with the content creators in territory. We have a pretty big department in Netflix devoted to just international originals, where we want to bring local stories globally. So they're local production, local stories by local filmmakers. And we want to, you know, bring those stories to the world because they would have otherwise never been seen, and maybe just these indie films at little festivals. So in that way, partnering with content creators, and then with our partners, like Warner Brothers and others, where you know, we are able to offer that global platform for shows that they would have maybe not otherwise distributed in market. So, you know, that's where I think that's how we can kind of help each other out.
For Play, the content that we have, you can find it on other platforms. So it's not a competition on necessarily having the content available. But for us, we focus on the user experience. So it's around the search and discovery, around being able to serve users or customers with content that they may want to watch just based on, you know, a little bit of AI and not necessarily just standard metadata. And so that's what our strategy is, just around what the experience is and helping users find content that they want to watch, or offering content that they may not know that they're looking for, but that may interest them.
Traditionally, studios have put a large investment in human localization, and it seems like with Netflix, Hermes as well has increased that investment. The cost has continued to rise, especially in certain territories like Brazil, where, you know, they've got unions and the dubbers are really expensive. What role do you see for automation in the future? I open that up to anyone.
So we definitely are interested in the technology that is presented around AI, and could there be things like text-to-speech that makes it faster to create subtitles. We haven't really seen, or at least from my perspective, seen the technology yet to automate the actual voices yet. There's certainly things out there that I'm sure there's lots of people in the organization that are already looking at, but I don't think that is the technology that is there yet from that perspective. We definitely would not want to have necessarily a Siri voice do all of our voiceovers. So that's definitely one of the challenges and future opportunities in how to make that process faster for voices. But again, it goes back to the systems of, can you at least gather that information quicker, do the translations quicker, while still allowing for the time to actually do the voice translations?
I would say the same. I think we can automate in the preparation to then do a dub recording, because there's a lot of research, and, you know, creating a dub script, it's not like you just read the script, it's a dub script. I think for Chelsea, we had used a cloud-based subtitling platform to do the research as well as the subtitling concurrently, and I know that's a subtitle example, but I think there's still a lot of, you know, automation in the preparation to the dub, so then at least if you shorten that time, then it still gives them the time that they need to record.
All right, I think that's all the time we have. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Connie, Quinn, Lena. Thank you, Jay. Fantastic. Connie, sorry about the picture. I've only known you for 10 years. I know what you look like. Dang it. That's my fault. Okay, moving on. We've got another Innovation and Technology 2025 Spotlight. This is talking about securing the making of the next Hollywood blockbuster. And in terms of flow, right, show flow, right? The idea of security on set, near set, ties into global productions, and I think this is something that also needs to be socialized. So that's kind of the through thread of thought here. To give us his insights, another chosen presenter, he's the Senior Program Manager for Microsoft Azure. Please welcome Mr. Joel Sloss.